They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Calculating the costs of terrorism, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. A new report says that in the most recent year where figures are available, acts of terror around the world cost economies a combined $53 billion. That's for 2014. It's up 61% from the year before. The $53 billion figure includes death and injury with medical costs, property damage, earnings lost. This according to the annual index from the Institute for Economics and Peace. $53 billion is like the GDP of Ethiopia or Bulgaria or some expansive projections of Apple's profits for this year. We've been reporting this week on the diverse sources of funding for the group that calls itself Islamic State, oil revenues, fundraising required for new recruits, sales of looted antiquities, ransoms. It adds up, but as Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson explains, experts differ on how long the sources of funding can last.
The Islamic State has gobs of money now, but how sustainable is their funding?
In the long term, much of their financial resources are not renewable.
Matthew Levitt is with the Washington Institute for Near East Policy.
When they dig up antiquities, there's no more antiquities.
When they steal from banks, those banks aren't replenished.
When they sell the oil, they don't have the ability to maintain the upkeep of these wells.
Plus, he says the U.S. is targeting networks ISIS sells to and bombing their wells or convoys. Bottom line, lots of money now, but he doesn't think it'll hold long term. Howard Schatz with the RAND Corporation says this sustainability question is the new thing his clients are asking him, both governmental agencies and the foundations he works with. His answer?
Really, we don't know. My own sense from researching the organization for many years is that it is pretty sustainable.
I tell him someone else had just told me the opposite.
That exactly captures for you what the debate is. And I think no one really knows.
He says we may know basically where the money's coming from, but it's hard to calculate how much there is or how long it may last. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
Although the stock market wasn't moving much in early trading Tuesday, yesterday the Dow rose 237 points. But the roaring stock market this fall may be in part a distortion. Listen to these new numbers on companies buying back their stock.
60% of all publicly held companies, and that's about 3,300 non-financial companies, have repurchased their own shares since 2010. That's a huge number of companies.
Julie Neiman is the analyst from the Heartland at Smith Moore & Company in St. Louis.
Well, all you're doing right here is earnings aren't going up, but you're reducing the number of shares outstanding. So earnings per share looks wonderful. It's all manipulation. That means bigger bonuses here.
So if you take profits and buy back some of your shares, it can inflate the stock price, but that is also money you're not spending elsewhere.
And what you're not doing is growing the company. You're reducing research and development. You're not doing any capital expenditures in terms of new plant, new equipment, trying to grow the company. In some situations where you have an old industry, maybe there is no growth there, in which case it does make sense to give it back to the shareholders in form of dividends or stock repurchases. But that's not the case with most American industries. We need to grow, but that's not where they're putting their money because that's not the way CEOs are being compensated.
Julie Neiman at Smith Moore & Company, thank you. China's healthcare system has had a hard time catching up. It's riddled with inefficiency and corruption. That said, experts say it's not as bad as the healthcare system in Russia. As part of our new series, China's Frontier Towns, Marketplace's Rob Schmitz takes us to a spot on China's northeastern border with Russia that is booming thanks in part to Russians coming over for medical care.
All the signs inside the waiting room of the Northeast Asia Hospital in this small Chinese city are Russian. So are the patients. They come from Vladivostok, Lake Baikal, and dozens of cities throughout Russia's Far East.
I really like it here, particularly the care I've received. I couldn't walk before, and now I can. Everything is efficient here.
75-year-old Lev Rubinchik spent 23 hours on a train and four more on a bus to come here to treat his arthritic knees. He's with a group of Russians from the remote region of Komsomolsk. His tour guide, Natalia, says she takes groups of medical tourists to China two or three times a month.
They treat their arms, legs, you name it. Older women come because plastic surgery here in China is so affordable.
The city of Huinchun has just 200,000 people. Other cities of this size in China typically have two or three hospitals. But Huinchun has 49 hospitals, most of them focused on treating Russians. Ko Hanqian is a local government official in charge of foreign tourists.
Russians are supposed to have universal medical care, but the system is bureaucratic and patients often have to wait a long time. Specialized care is also really expensive there. Here the prices are low, the service is good, and it's very convenient.
Pretty soon it might become even more convenient. Last month, a bullet train to Huinchun was opened, connecting the city to China's rapidly expanding high-speed rail network. China wants to extend the line to Vladivostok in Russia, and if it does, more patients and more money will follow. Along China's border with Russia, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
And is that a slice of pizza stacked with the hipster blue jeans? There's news that the parent company of Urban Outfitters is going to buy a pizza chain called Pizzeria Vetri in an effort to really diversify. Food and Wine magazine named Vetri as one of the best pizza places in the country, but I will be the judge of that. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.